Bronx made, Bronx made, Bronx made, Bronx made, Bronx made.
Hey, que lo que? Welcome to Bronx Girl at Heart presents Casa Confessions, where young bosses and creatives confess funny and harsh truths about their come up. Welcome again to another episode. I know we've been slacking and we haven't been the most consistent, but we will be this time around. This is the start of a whole bunch of episodes that we're just going to be throwing at y'all, and you guys are going to love it. Today, we're focused on transplants taking over New York City. We're going to be focused on Jake Paul representing Puerto Rico in boxing and gentrification. Oh, phone is ringing. Yeah, girl, come on in. We got a guest.
Hey.
Hey.
It is too cute in here.
I love that you love it. Yes. So introduce yourself to the people here.
Yeah, sure thing. So I am Mariah. I am a journalist. Mm-hmm. I primarily have covered BIPOC communities, Latino communities, culture. Mm-hmm. I also work in the audience realm, so a lot of social media work, and that led me to starting a personal project called Hood History Here, where I kind of document my gentrifying neighborhood. I'm a Bushwick Bori, is the term I describe myself as, so Boricua, born and raised in Bushwick, and so, yeah, the passion project has just, like, kind of, I really started it for myself, and it's kind of healed me in a sense. So I'm excited to maybe talk about it because it really does involve all the topics you just said: transplant, gentrification, New York City changing.
Yes, Mariah, it is so nice to have you here, and I feel like you were being a little humble. So I came across you on my For You page, I believe it was Instagram, mm-hmm. and I saw a lot of the cute videos that you did with your dad mm-hmm. and other people, other family and friends surrounding gentrification mm-hmm. in New York City. And lately, if you are in New York City, it is intern season. It has commenced. So transplants and people coming into our city is a big topic of conversation.
Yeah.
And you've also worked for some really reputable places, done some really cool things. You worked at Time recently, yeah. and you're a reporter, social media strategist. Yep. So the list goes on in your resume. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool because I feel like I'm definitely trying to sort of take the tools I've learned in the professional realm, but actually apply it to some stuff outside of it. And I think mm-hmm. that's, like, you know, why I wanted to do some personal videos and stuff and projects and storytelling. 'Cause I think that New York City is evolving and changing, and to be able to have New York natives tell the stories and preserve our culture. It's, you know, I'm using, like, the professional skills, but for, I think, personal matters, things that matter to me.
Yes. And what got you into this reporting space? Like, you are actually a journalist, not yeah. just someone who just TikToks and says random things. Right. So why is the journalism part important to you?
Yeah, it's so important to me because there are a lot of people, like citizen journalists on TikTok that yes. just kind of, like, share information.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, always had an interest in storytelling. My mom, I grew up in Brooklyn and Bushwick in public housing and, you know, with my single mom, and my mom's so smart.
Mm.
I just always remembered observing her, like, watching the news and just, like, always telling me that knowledge is power and, like, getting involved
mm-hmm.
and in all of that. So for me, the realm was journalism. I wanted to be able to talk to people and understand how to share information in a productive, ethical way. And so as much as it's, like, TikTok's fun, I do try to root it in, you know, reality and in ethics and in facts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think journalism's a dying industry. There's a lot of, like, yeah. lack of trust, and mm-hmm. that's rightfully so. But, yeah, I definitely am trying to use it for good.
Yes. Let's talk about how facts are so important in a time of misinformation and so many social media citizen journalists, like you said. So it's amazing to still have people like you who actually went to school for it and yeah. are fighting for facts and for our communities as well. We really appreciate you.
Yeah, disinformation is serious, especially Latino communities and all of us on our phones. There aren't a lot of, like, instructions on how to, like, really gauge your feed and what makes sense and what doesn't. Mm. And so I always say too, like, when you watch my videos, like, go fact check yourself. Like, yeah, don't just look at one thing, you know?
And especially for Latinos, I think a lot of our parents, their feeds are full of like chismes and gossip. That's the thing in the Latin world, just gossip world. It's even crazier than it is in the US. Like, you think the shade room and everything is a lot. Like, what about all the gordo y la flaca, all the craziness? I know, all the craziness that consumes the minds of our parents and even our grandparents. So it's definitely important to see Latin faces putting in the facts as well. Okay, we're gonna get into more seriousness, but before we get started, I did want to talk about, I did want to start like a fun game to get us comfortable. And the game is called Name Your Ick.
Okay. Icks are hard to come back from. Once you got an ick, it's like, the ick is there.
Yes, the ick is there permanently. Okay, just to guide everyone on the rules of the game. So the host, me, I'm going to say a word and you're going to identify the first ick that comes to your mind with the word. Lower East Side.
Lower East Side. I would say an ick would be yuppies.
Ooh.
Yuppies.
What are yuppies? Can you explain?
Yeah. Yuppies are young professionals in urban neighborhoods. You usually see them on your train with a Trader Joe's bag and a very specific fit. And you know what? I will say I don't mind the yuppies. Probably the non-self-aware yuppies that just kind of are in LES, don't really understand that Alphabet City and Loisaida were, you know, predominantly immigrant neighborhoods. So a specific type of yuppie.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a cool yuppie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think people, when it comes to the transplant conversation and gentrification, people feel stuck, I'm sure. Because it's like, okay, I have a job in the city. Okay, I need to move. Mm-hmm. This is the rent that I can afford.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to move into a neighborhood and not ruin everything?
There's so much nuance in this conversation of gentrification. I think people really want it to be like one or the other. I left for college and I moved to Washington, D.C., which was known as the Chocolate City, another predominantly black urban neighborhood area, right? And so I know what it is to be a young professional that has to live somewhere that they're not from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not telling, you know, everybody in Iowa to stay in Iowa or that I can't leave Bushwick and live somewhere else. But I think that's why I'm going to add the not self-aware, because I think that is the part. Like, if you're going to come, like, no interest in what was here before, no interest in, like, having a curiosity or, you know, there's a way to come.
Yeah.
Come correct.
Come correct. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because I know there's people watching who probably have that question.
Yeah. And like,
you just cleared it up. It. Yes. Okay. Williamsburg.
So I think I said this. So I grew up in the border of Bushwick and Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. So let me just set that precedent. Mm-hmm. My grandparents came from PR in the 50s. Williamsburg and Bushwick were really, really, really tough. The south side of Williamsburg, Los Sures, was all Puerto Ricans. The north side was Italians, a lot of beef.
Mm-hmm.
So understand my context of Williamsburg and Bushwick is the hood, right?
Okay.
Not what we're experiencing today. My ick for Williamsburg would probably be the new Chanel and Hermes stores.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you explain?
They said, so, you know, they're like, the whole, you know, your hood is changing when Whole Foods or Starbucks comes. Well, Williamsburg is on, it's on another level. Yeah. We get Hermes and Chanel.
So it just skipped to the thousandth level.
Like Manhattan, like it's not even like, it's like crazy.
Yeah.
I can't even understand it.
And who's affording Hermes and Chanel?
Well, apparently all of the newcomers that can, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like Williamsburg is unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Bushwick is next.
Bushwick. Bushwick ick would be transplants that walk through the PJs without fear.
Oh.
Yeah.
So would you, okay, the PJs are the projects. I'm sure everyone watching knows, just want to clarify. Yeah. Okay. So transplants, what exactly is the ick in that? Would you prefer them to walk through the projects with fear?
I would prefer they have enough fear to know not to walk through.
No, honestly, I do share the same ick. So I was in, we were in Brooklyn, I feel like it was maybe like 6 months ago or something. And there was an active like shooting that had just happened. And we saw a few people that, you know, from the Caucasus Mountains, let's just say, they were just on a bike, just biking by.
It's the bikers.
They were just...
The bikers really have the... Like, they just...
Biking by while there's a whole bunch of police. We literally just saw a group of 10 guys, young men, just run the opposite direction. Yeah. I'm shook. The Citizen app is blowing up. Yeah. And they're just biking around town.
Yeah.
And I have heard people say, like, people that I work with, you know, maybe transplants and stuff like that. I've heard people say, New York is so safe. I feel like I can walk anywhere at any time of night because there's always people, there's always lights.
Yeah.
So there are people that feel safer in New York City.
No, ignorance is bliss. I mean, if you didn't grow up in a Bushwick or Williamsburg or, you know, East New York, Canarsie, wherever in New York City, I mean, all of New York City and all these urban neighborhoods are being impacted right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the context. Like, the reason why New Yorkers, we're so proud to be New Yorkers. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like before I'm body... Before I am woman, I am a New Yorker, right? And it's because you go through a lot growing up.
We went through the mud here,
exactly. So it's like we have context. So I sometimes get invited to a brunch, you know, in Williamsburg with friends, and I'm like in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember this happened to me two blocks away, or that, you know, this happened to my. We've been here for three generations, so they've got their whole stories too. So I think it's that we have context. So. Mm-hmm. I think they have the luxury of safety, and it's, you know, it's an ick.
Yeah. I felt that 100%. Yeah. I felt that 100%. Because the other side would be like, okay, would you want us to feel unsafe in your neighborhoods? Would you want us to be Karens and just call the cops on everybody? That would be the opposite way to look at things.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like figuring out, like, where's the onus of, like, who comes and when and how and why, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's start at the question of, this is a working class neighborhood and you are coming into our space, right?
Yes.
It's modern day colonialism. You see everyone up in arms about Christopher Columbus, but I would argue, what is the difference between now and urban communities having working class, immigrant, low income people existing in a neighborhood and having other people come and say, well, let me just, you know, let me sit right up in here and let me claim, right? Mm-hmm. And let me forget and let me ignore. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think the root of it is, let's address that before we even talk about you feeling safe or not, because you're entering our space. So I don't really care if you feel safe or not. Right?
That's agreed. That just made me think completely random. That just made me think of the other day I was at Max Deals, which is like a discount store by us. And then there was this man that clearly a transplant, and he got upset because they wouldn't take cash back at the store.
Yeah, it's like, like they want like accommodations. But it's like you're entering our space.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think ideally, like a transplant would, and we're going long on this one, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
A transplant would probably try to understand what NYCHA is and how what we've gone through in these buildings. And I think then, you know, maybe you don't have to like further stigmatize it, but that isn't to have the ganas to just walk through like no problem. I think that's not right either.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think all nuance, like
Agreed. There's
a gray in this.
Agreed. So House of Yes is next on the list.
House of Yes. Yeah. Okay, hard to not know about House of Yes if you go out in Bushwick. I would say the ick House of Yes would be, I guess, the slight lack of self-awareness for some of the crowd / the House of Yes owners themselves. Bushwick and Williamsburg have undergone serious transformation also in the nightlife realm, and it has attracted, like, so many like young professionals coming to those areas, and these areas were very residential. I mean, we had our little like nightlife, right?
Yeah.
We would go to Tonita's on Grand, and we had our nightlife.
Yeah.
But now it's like nightlife on a global scale, you'll have, like, you know, a DJ from Berlin playing at House of Yes on Johnson and Bushwick. And it's like, mm-hmm. I'm like telling my mom, I'm like, mommy, I'm going out tonight, like down the street. And she's like freaking out, like, oh my God, please be careful. And I'm like, oh no, you don't understand. Like, everybody is out here partying now. Like, wow. You know, everybody. So I would say with House of Yes, when you go, a lot of these clubs, very queer friendly, which we love. And they try to always tell you when you come in, like, this is a very inclusive space, this is a safe space. They kind of give you the speech before. Mm-hmm. A couple other clubs, like Nowadays in Ridgewood and all of them, they give you this, like, speech before you enter. But I'm always kind of like, I feel like there's a lack of self-awareness sometimes in the different types of marginalized groups that can displace each other, right? Mm. So these neighborhoods were, again, predominantly people of color, low income. Right now we're seeing a lot of predominantly white queer people from across the U.S. living in these neighborhoods and predominantly going to places like House of Yes.
Mm. So let's talk about white queer privilege. Do you feel like that's a thing that's happening?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, so, like, for LES, we said that when we were talking about LES, a lot of artists were part of the development and displacement of low-income immigrants in the Lower East Side. There's this art movement, and they existed down there, and then as rent gets more expensive, they move, they cross the water, they came to Williamsburg, and they got their lofts. And I remember taking the L train, you know, growing up, I grew up on the L, and I remember I went to school in the Bronx, so I was commuting like crazy every day.
Yeah.
And I would just people watch. This was before iPhones. I would just be, you know, staring at people. And I noticed every few years, I'd be like, oh my gosh, mommy, like, they got off, you know, on Bedford right after Manhattan. And then I'd be like, oh my God, mommy, they're getting off with us.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, oh my gosh, they're staying on the train. Like, we get off and they're staying on.
Yeah.
And it was this, like, visual representation of, like, oh, it won't, surely they're not going to come to us. Like, they don't like it, you know? And I'm only 26 years old. Like, this is a very short span of time to feel shame and embarrassment of a neighborhood to then it be celebrated for things like nightlife. And I would say that, yeah, it's a lot of, I'm noticing, because I myself, you know, identify as queer. And this is thinking, like, queer people always existed in these neighborhoods because we're everywhere, but I don't think we have the same privileges to maybe live in the way that they shine now, right? In these neighborhoods seeking refuge and safety. And so sometimes it's like very confusing because I'm like, wow, like they see Bushwick and Williamsburg as like a safe haven for queer freedom. And I'm like, Latinos, there's like all types of homophobia and machismo culture and all these things where it's like, to try to switch my brain to be like, oh, this is now suddenly a place that I don't have to feel that way. I'm like trying to catch up myself. And I think the queer community coming has been, you know, it's great. I'm so, but I think there needs to be some self-awareness. Like, you know, low-income people used to live here, you know? And like, sometimes there could be those intersections of like, all of those things being true, like queer people feeling safe there, but low-income people of color who also might be queer going through the loss of their hood at the same time.
Oh my gosh. And it's crazy how you said, like, you're even your parents, which are just, you know, one, two generations behind, they don't even realize, they haven't even been able to catch up to all the changes that have happened.
It's so funny because my mom, you know, she is like a Bushwick body. Like, she, her dad came when he was a, you know, orphan from PR, like 18 years old. And she knows nothing but Bushwick. Wow. And I tell her, I'm like, mommy, like, this, that, and the other. But she's so in her community. She's so, like, surrounded with, you know, Puerto Ricans in her community. Whereas I, you know, first to go to high school, first to go to college, first to leave New York, first to work in this type of professional career. So I'm constantly in rooms and in spaces with people that are not validating my experience as a Puerto Rican in this neighborhood, right? Mm. I have co-workers, white co-workers that now live in my hood and they're raising white children there. I have, you know, friends from college that the first place that they're going to move when they come to New York City because they can afford it is my hood. Wow. These are all like things that I'm kind of isolated in my age, I guess, that my parents aren't relating to, where I'm like, to be this age and for your hood to be changing is interesting. And bringing it back to House of Yes, like, young people want, I want to experience nightlife. So it's kind of like really interesting. Like I remember going to Mood Ring and remembering things like happening to my family and I was trying to dance and enjoy myself. And I realized there's a lot of stories and histories here and nightlife is supposed to be free and fun. And so I wish House of Yes would continue and they've started having more local DJs, hosting community events, having an awareness. This used to be a low, you know, an area where brown people lived, brown and black people lived.
And that's really helpful. I appreciate that part in your answer. Like there are things that people can do to make things better for the people that have been there for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one on this game, transplants.
Transplants. An ick. I would say the ones that have a lack of curiosity. I think we were talking about this before. It's inevitable. We live in New York City, a very desirable city. People want to live here.
Yeah.
People watch Friends and Sex and the City and every rom-com of the early 2000s. I love New York City too. I just didn't choose to love it. I just was born here. And I think people forget that this is also just home to people. So a lot of people that come here, you know, they're able to go back home to wherever home is for them.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to go in peace. And sometimes I want to come home in peace as well. And so I think that, yes, it's inevitable that people are going to come. Have a curiosity. Try to understand and know what is the space that you're entering, what used to be there, and how you can, if you are going to live there, be a pleasant neighbor, a pleasant person.
Agreed. That's a good theme in this conversation. Just be curious and don't be an asshole. Basically, that's the main idea here. And we're going to get further into transplants. That's a good segue into the next part of the conversation. I wanted to just talk about the new trendy establishments and restaurants that are coming into these neighborhoods and the effects that they can have on the community. So you mentioned Hermes and luxury stores. Is there another neighborhood change or addition that has triggered you recently?
Yeah, I have a story. I went to get ramen in Midtown with a friend. It was really yummy. It's called Ichiran.
Okay.
Highly recommend.
Nice.
And I remember coming home to visit my mom and I was telling her like, oh, mommy, I had ramen today in Midtown. I'm explaining it to her, how it's like this really cool experience, specifically this place. You're like kind of solo dining there. And she was like, oh, well, I would love to go. And I said, well, bet. We'll go. And I'm looking it up and I realized, mommy, they opened a Bushwick location.
Wow.
We could just walk. And she was like, well, wow, like interesting. We could just kind of experience this because we were so used to having to go into the city to experience things. And on the walk there, we saw that Netflix had built like a huge studio in my neighborhood.
Wow.
And it had the whole Netflix sign. It was a whole lot. They took up a block and it was about two blocks from the ramen spot. And I remembered looking at Netflix production studios a couple blocks from the projects and just thinking, this is wild. You know, like I just never thought that this level of development at this speed would happen. And I remembered looking at that Netflix building and it felt like it meant more than, you know, there's obviously all of the glass buildings and everything that goes up. But I remember just like this gut feeling where I was like, I genuinely feel like I'm losing my home, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
And Netflix specifically, leaning into that example, what is the harm in that? So you mentioned Netflix is built directly across from the projects. For people out there who probably don't understand, how is that harmful?
Yeah. So Netflix is like, I feel like Netflix coming to Bushwick, it is such a tell sign that even corporations feel like this is a safe, up-and-coming enough place to place hundreds of employees in a professional sense. So, you know, of course you have like the one-off 20-something-year-old who has a job in the city and is living with three roommates in Bushwick because that's all they can afford. But to have Netflix say, of all the areas in the East Coast, we're going to open our first studio, we're going to do it in Bushwick. And I just felt like that professional corporation mindset to come into a hood, it, it, transcended anything. I was like, wow, like, this is changed to that point, you know? And so Netflix employees, a couple blocks from the peas, yeah.
Wow. Okay. And we've talked about transplants, but really this is a part of a larger conversation of gentrification, and that is the center of a lot of your work. So what is gentrification? Do you have a clear way to define that for the people listening?
Yeah, gentrification is essentially when low-income neighborhoods have wealthier people move in. They tend to develop a space, and so there is this kind of developer element as well. It's not just the renter, it's not just that, but it's like people of a higher bracket coming in, and it tends to then lead to displacement, and that displacement unfortunately tends to push people out. There is also unfortunately a massive cultural erasure, and that's I think what we spend a lot of time talking about. A lot of people, when they talk about gentrification, it's like, okay, you see the Whole Foods, you see the Starbucks, you see the glass building going up, and abuela can't afford the taxes and she leaves. I am most interested, and I like to spend time really thinking about how culturally erasing people from a neighborhood and removing their presence. Mm-hmm. That is dangerous, right? That is the part that's scary. And I think also the mental health effects of what all of that implies.
Wow. Do you want to explain a little bit about that? What are the mental health effects of gentrification?
It's actually, I would love for more people to research it, because I actually don't have the answers myself. Although I did see an academic in California did do like a dissertation on it. But it's severely understudied, because we are still, witnessing and undergoing it. But I started thinking about it because I was having mental health issues. Every time I'd come home, I would see the Netflix building, I would see my grandparents', house that I grew up in was no longer there. These mom and pop shops no longer open. I would go on dates with people not from New York in New York, and I would tell them, I grew up in Brooklyn. And when I would say Bushwick, they would have a perception that I lived like a different life than I lived. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, I feel gaslit right now. Like, I grew up tough, and you're telling me that you perceive this as like something else.
Yeah.
Like, we're living two different realities,
Wow.
And so I just started having these anxieties and severe sadness. And so I think that it needs to be more looked into, but that's why I did my project, was because I there's different ways that we're all contributing to preserving our hood, right? There's some people that do archiving work. There's some people that, draw paintings, and there's some people that make musicals about the Heights, and there's such a range of contribution. There's some people that are, actually working in government roles or activists, but I'm a journalist. And so for me, my mental health was hurting because I felt like people didn't believe me when I said that Williamsburg used to be Puerto Ricans and that Bushwick used to be low income people. Mm-hmm. And so I think I decided, actually I talked to my therapist and I was like, I'm really struggling with this. And she was like, I think you need to be proactive. And so because I thought, well, what is my contribution? I am a reporter, I'm a journalist, and I can't go in the picket line fence because that's not my contribution. And I can't, I'm not going to, run for office.
Yeah.
So I felt like, how can I help my mental health? Well, let me try to share this information in a helpful way. Mm-hmm. So I started making those videos for my mental health, like to just feel like because I can't make the developer not build the building. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But what I can do is tell the people moving in the building, did you know what used to be here, And I actually think people are more curious to know. They just don't know where to get the information.
Yeah. That's why I appreciate you sharing that, because a lot of people probably relate. And good for you that you had some education when it comes to journalism and reporting. Yeah. But there's probably people out there that don't have that outlet and are just feeling these emotions, and it may translate into anger or different actions.
Oh, and I was angry.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't start my project till I dealt with anger.
That's real.
But I worked through anger. I like I said, I had moved to D.C. and I experienced what it is to be a young professional in a city I'm not from. And I feel like I have a lot of empathy for people. People that aren't from New York living in New York, I'm like, you guys have it tough. I could go to my abuela's on Sunday and have her food and go, you know, hug my mom, you know, when I need to. So, like, shout out to y'all for doing it without family. This is a tough city. But I think that, you know, if I have empathy for you, maybe you could return it too and understand that it's hard for me to come home and not have, you know, access to these mom and pop shops that I grew up in. Or my mom's in NYCHA, so we have, like, the loophole of public housing, although that's now getting privatized. But, yeah, like, to say that the only reason we can afford to stay in Bushwick is because my mom is in public housing is unfortunate.
That's so real. I want to give you a hug. That's so real. I feel so bad that this is happening to all of us.
It's but here's the thing. And with the project, I get comments from every city imaginable. Every Philly, Chicago, in Europe.
Because it's not just a New York issue.
No. I mean, I will say this is, like, on steroids. Like I said, we got our Hermes and Chanel.
Yeah.
Like, this is, you know, next level stuff.
Yeah.
But no, it's, like, every urban city is facing this right now.
Yeah. Okay. And we're going to pivot slightly, but we're going to refer to celebrities who have commented on this issue. And someone who actually is from the projects, Jay-Z. In 2019, Jay-Z, in a New York City Webster Hall performance, he did a freestyle tribute to Nipsey Hussle, and part of his rap went like this. He said, "Gentrify your own hood before these people do it. Claim eminent domain and have your people move in." That's a small glimpse into what Nipsey was doing. For anybody still confused as to how he was doing, as to what he was doing. What are your initial reactions to that? This happened in 2019, but I thought it would be cool to loop it back into this conversation.
I mean, it's so relevant.
Yeah.
I remember it was slightly controversial, him saying that.
Yeah.
I feel like I understand the essence of what he was trying to convey. I do think that his use of saying, like, let us gentrify our own hood was probably not the best word. I think he is right that, you know, I would love a scenario where we are investing in our neighborhoods and we are rehabilitating them. But I will say that, perfect example, people, I struggle a lot about the fact that the houses that my parents grew up in are no longer ours. They're like these, like, really metropolitan looking apartment buildings. And I always get comments of people being like, well, you shouldn't sell the block. Don't sell the block. And I'm like, I don't think people understand, like, if you don't have investments into the hood, this is what happens, is that other comes in and they make it nice for themselves, right? And so I am very glad to know that Jay was able to make it out the P's and do his thing. But I think there's a slight lack of understanding of actually what it takes to rehabilitate a neighborhood. And I think I have empathy and I understand why, when a developer comes and is offering a little bit of money to, you know, someone that has property and they don't have financial literacy was not a thing. You know what I'm saying? Imagine we had some financial classes, you know, growing up, but also, like, imagine redlining didn't happen. You know how many of us just couldn't have ownership in our hood because they literally would not give us loans. We've been discriminated against in the housing system since the beginning. And so we have to really understand and think about all of that. And I think we're at a disadvantage to say, just, you know, get yourself right and make it happen for yourself. Like, I don't think that that's the reality unless, you know, imagine those people came in and made it better, but not to push us out, but to help us. But that's not their intention, you know? But I would say that, yeah, like, the city, the community, everyone should have this obligation to, like, wanting to make things better. But it starts earlier. It starts at the school level. It starts at, you know, investing in public health. It starts in investing earlier. It's I hear him, but like, how you want us to do that, Jay?
Yeah, I think with the gentrify your own hoods comment, I feel like he was talking to other rich people, probably. Other rich people who grew up in those communities.
Well, I think he had a quote after that was like, basically like, get out the hood, or you don't have to get out the hood, but get out the hood mentality. That's real, though. That's not me.
Yeah.
I get him.
I think that's real, though.
I think it's real, but I'm
unfair to say
empathizing
sometimes.
Yeah. Why people stay in it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I have family members that are like, well, this is what happens when we didn't do anything with the block. And I'm like, you guys were facing the drug epidemic and every type of, like, issue in your neighborhood. What yeah. made you think you were just gonna, you know, be able to resurrect from all of it? A couple people do, but to say that a whole neighborhood is capable of doing that without investment, without, like, trying to get people to actually go to school, get a trade, invest in one another, address your mental health. We talking about mental health issues now.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents back then, all of this was, like, things that people were not addressing. So mm-hmm. I think we're more equipped now, but home ownership is down. And it costs a couple mil to buy property in New York City now. So it's not the same as before.
Agreed. Whew, agreed. And especially now that I am a working adult and adulting is adulting, I could only imagine some of the struggles that my parents or my grandparents were dealing with when my grandparents immigrated to this country because capitalism be capitalizing off of me, and I'm not even dealing with some of the struggles that they were dealing with. Yeah. It's like, I really do feel like the U.S., the way it works, it keeps its foot on your neck. Because it's like, you make a bigger paycheck, okay, you get bigger taxes. Okay, now you can afford a bigger property. You still have 2 cents on your bank account until the next pay period.
It's really tough.
And there's nowhere to go.
Yeah,
there's nowhere to go.
Did you see that meme that was like, dang, I should have bought that. I knew I should have bought that property when I was 3 years old or something.
Right.
Like, what were we doing slacking, not buying a house at 8 years old when the, you know.
I don't know why my mom was telling me not to go to the South Bronx by myself. I should have invested into those Mott Haven buildings. I should have did that.
Yeah.
I don't know why she didn't tell me to go over there.
Well, the fact that
I was busy in pre-K and stuff. I should have.
That was their mistake. We should have invested early.
Right. She should have got me together.
yeah. So, We love Jay. He's...
Agree.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to pivot a little bit because gentrification is not just happening in New York, as you mentioned. It is a U.S.-wide problem. It's also a global problem. So, since you are the self-proclaimed Brooklyn Bushwick body, we're going to talk about some of the gentrification displacement that's been happening in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Specifically pointing to some examples with Jake Paul.
Yeah.
So, Jake Paul, he recently said that he would be representing Puerto Rico in a boxing match against Mexican boxer Canelo. And a lot of wealthy people, just for context, are moving to Puerto Rico. Jake Paul, Logan Paul, for example, for the tax breaks. And there's a lot of complications with this. A lot of people are not happy about this, the people that live around these areas, because they're making beaches inaccessible. And it's just terrible. How does that make you feel, having Puerto Rican family members identifying as Puerto Rican? How does that make you feel to know that it's not just happening in Bushwick, but it's also happening in Puerto Rico?
It's so interesting because it's like you're displaced from Puerto Rico. And then your family migrates to New York and they're displaced from New York and then cannot really even go back to PR. So it's like
the layers.
Where do you want us to go?
The layers of trauma.
Yeah, layers of trauma.
It's like, do you want us here?
No, they don't want us anywhere. I'm like, where exactly can we exist now?
Wow.
Yeah, I think it is deeply painful to know what is going on in PR, and the Jake Paul stuff is so silly.
Mm-hmm.
For him to be in a position to represent PR, and like, boxing is such a like body thing, and
wow,
it's such a
I recently learned about that
too. My dad is like, oh my god, I have so many memories of just watching boxing with my dad growing up, and there are so many like talented body boxers that worked so hard to like break through in that industry. And so Jake Paul's from Ohio. I would love for him to represent where he's from. And I think that it does, unfortunately, take away from, like, real bodies that are boxing and are trying to make a name for themselves. And it is so tone deaf to the fact that there are a lot of influencers and crypto people and wealthy people trying to, you know, save on their taxes, move to PR. But to go as far as to represent PR as a white man from Ohio is bold.
Yeah.
It's bold and it's hurtful.
I have to ask the question just to be annoying. Is Jake Paul Puerto Rican?
How could he be? But how could he be? But how could he be?
If he were to...
But how could he be? Like he reincarnated himself?
He lives in Puerto Rico. He's barely paying taxes. He's paying Puerto Rican taxes. He has property in the community.
I mean, if you... He lives in Puerto Rico. That's about it.
Okay. So he doesn't have the right to represent Puerto Rico as a boxer.
I mean, I'm to say...
Because I'm thinking about there's people in sports. Mm-hmm. There's people that move to other countries and represent that country. There are African players, Nigerian players that play for a Spanish soccer team. Mm-hmm. And they'll represent Spain. That happens in sports. Yeah. So what is different about this Jake Paul situation?
Jake Paul has every right to do anything he wants to do. Mm-hmm. But Puerto Ricans have every right to be upset. And
yeah.
And so he's going to do what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it is tone deaf because Puerto Ricans are facing an economic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Puerto Ricans are, you know, a colony that are, their resources are depleted. Bodies have it on the island are really the most resilient people you've ever. So to like, you can't be Puerto Rican because he is not experiencing what that is.
Yeah.
And so I think that from my understanding, although he is a resident of Puerto Rico, I would like to think he has the option to not claim that. He doesn't have to put the flag. I think he could claim the U.S. I think he could claim where he's from. He lives there. That's fine.
Yeah.
That would, to me, be ideal, but he, you know, he could do whatever he needs to do, but I think Puerto Ricans have every right to be hurt by it.
How are Puerto Ricans fighting back against the issues that are happening right now?
Yeah, I mean, Puerto Ricans are, again, I describe them as, like, the most resilient people I think I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bodies have always had to organize since being one of the oldest colonies in the world. There has always been this activism at the root of their response to a lot of their oppression. And I think the gentrification that they're experiencing, being priced out, you mentioned the privatization of their beaches, that's also very much happening. And so it's a lot of on the ground organizing. It's a lot of work across diasporas. So a lot of New Yorkers collaborating with those on the island. On my end, you know, as like a journalist, I try to shed light on some of this when it makes sense to. But yeah, there is a really awesome initiative called Las Playas Son del Pueblo. The beaches are ours, they're of our people. And they have actually been very successful in their on-the-ground protesting and claiming what is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, bodies are badass. I remember in where I grew up on the border of Bushwick and Williamsburg, when they took down the Graham sign, Avenida de Puerto Rico, it was the morning of my 25th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the community of Puerto Ricans, we called the city so quick, and we were like, where did our sign go? Because that is like so iconic to us. We've had that sign for like 60 plus years. Like, whenever people doubt that Bushwick is Bori, I'm like, come to Graham and you'll see the little viejitos playing dominoes, the cuchifrito, the corner, and our little avenida sign. And there's a permanence to that the city has that for us. So, yeah, the Department of Transportation took it down, and I remembered, I was like, you know not to, the city knows not to upset Puerto Ricans, because they put that sign back up the next day.
Wow.
And we tried to get answers, and they were like, they didn't give them to us still to this day. They're like, oh, it was like, you know, some, I don't know what it was, but they were scared.
So what did the sign say initially and what did they want to change it to?
So the avenue, we say Graham, it's Graham.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to, Graham.
Yeah, Graham. I don't know.
Graham.
Okay.
Graham is, you know, an avenue. Under it, for the span of a good amount of blocks, we had an official avenue of Puerto Rico.
Wow.
And we've had it for 80 years. And yeah, when we woke up last year on my birthday, it was eerie. I was like, this is weird.
Yeah.
They removed it. They removed it and just replaced it with a sin Avenida de Puerto Rico. It just said Graham. And so there had been, there's a Gothamist reporting from a few years back that some developers were trying to get the Avenida de Puerto Rico removed because it would help with the development and more people wanting to move into the neighborhood.
That
and
is so
that
so
we
weird.
Had been fearing that that was going to happen, and then it did. But then we like reacted. So it's like, you know, if it's happening in the beaches in PR, it's happening, you know, with a little DOT sign on Graham, and all the Puerto Ricans, no matter if it's here or over there, we're like defending ours.
That is so weird. Do you feel that there's a specific targeting towards Puerto Rico from the U.S. government? And what is that like? Because it seems like you guys are getting displaced in Puerto Rico, getting displaced in New York, and especially here with that sign, Avenida de Puerto Rico. It was specifically towards your community.
I think it's just like a byproduct of colonialism.
Yeah.
I think PR is experiencing that, and we're experiencing it here, and so are, you know, our Black brothers and sisters, and, you know, the Asian community in Flushing, Queens. Like, it's just, it's not specific to us.
Yeah.
But it's happening to us and to our peers. And I think there's a lot of connection across different Latin diasporas and people of color that just know what it is to be fighting against oppression.
Yeah.
You know?
But they got that sign back up the next day.
They got the sign back up.
Period.
And hopefully it stays up.
Yes. Okay. Neighborhoods change all the time, though. Yeah. And that's something I want to get into because there is an argument that gentrification is a natural process. And I want to know, can gentrification help people? What are the benefits, if there are?
Yeah. Okay. Two things. The first, can gentrification... So I think, and we kind of mentioned this before, that, you know, sometimes gentrification can be nuanced and layered.
Mm-hmm.
I explained to you a story earlier about being able to go to a very cool ramen experience down the block from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something usually that could happen maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, so maybe it's like quote unquote safer or new development or new opportunities. But if you remove the people, if you remove us and we don't benefit from it, then no, I would not say that that is a positive, right? Who is it a positive for? It's a positive for the new people that are there.
Yeah.
I think, again, if you're in a situation where, you know, you aren't being targeted by developer vultures that are trying to price you out, if you can afford taxes in the property that you do own and to stay, you know, if you live in public housing as a loophole to stay in your hood, in a gentrified hood, maybe there are some outliers of people that are able to stay and experience some pockets of this. But then again, it comes with the other things of, like I said, your peers are no longer there. What if I don't want to go to Hermes? What if I want to go to Shoppers World or Rainbow or Pretty Girl, right? So it's like, who is it better for?
Yeah.
Is the question. It might be better, but it's like, for who? I don't think that I don't think that I want all the elements of what made my home to remove themselves, to remove and not be there in order for a place to be deemed as livable or desirable. Like, we already lived there and we existed in community. Back to the safety question, if you grew up in your hood, it getting better, doesn't mean suddenly you feel safer. Because I still feel how I feel the last years I've always felt, because to me, I'm not like a newcomer in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So there's not that ignorance of like a person on a bike going through the projects. If I go through the projects, I'm gonna still feel that way. I remember after the Joker movie came out, and everybody was going on them steps in the Bronx, and people were going there taking photos, like if it was, you know, just let's take a touristic photo. Yeah. And I'm like, you know how many people be stressed coming up and down those stairs? You know what I'm saying? That doesn't remove because suddenly the Joker came out and people were taking pictures there. Hoods still exist. The PJs are still there. You know?
Yeah. I did do some slight research on the benefits of gentrification, and these are some points that I found. I saw that property value rises for homeowners. Diverse.
Property rises, right, value. So for the people... We gotta pause there.
Okay.
So redlining was massive in New York City and in urban areas. Brown, Black, Latino people struggled to be homeowners in New York City. We did not get the same loans. So these loans, they would give them to non-Black and white people because they felt like it wasn't unsafe, these unsafe neighborhoods. And once redlining and like housing, once it was outlawed, we had the remnants of redlining, right? And so, yeah, we experienced that first. And I think that's like a really important point is our relationship to housing and ownership, home ownership, which is how you build wealth in this country. We were already at a deficit.
Yeah.
So to then now have value go up, who is it going up for and who owns the buildings, you know? And can those people still pay those taxes with the working class jobs that they have? So I would say that's true, but who is that benefiting?
Agreed. I'm going to keep going through the benefits and then I just want to hear what you have to say to it. So these are the benefits of gentrification that I found in my little research. So property value rises, which you mentioned, there is the redlining issue, and then diverse dining entertainment options, reduced crime rate, exposure to diverse cultures, and new job opportunities. What do you have to say to that?
I think it all goes back to for who. Yeah, if all these things are happening and they're true, but none of the people who made the community what it was can afford to stay and live there, and they're no longer living there, what is... The Heights, what is Dyckman without Dominicans? So let's say, it becomes super metropolitan and we have all of the things you just described, but there's not a Dominican in sight, then what is the benefit of that, right? So I think that if all of those things are true in a way that doesn't displace and remove people from the hood, then let's talk about it, because then that sounds great.
Yeah, sign me up. But that's not what's happening in reality, is what you're saying.
No, I think it, unfortunately, it comes with the removal of us, and we can't experience the six things that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Now, a conversation we were getting to earlier before the camera cut off is what makes a real New Yorker? So we're going to pivot a little bit to how you define a New Yorker.
I feel like it's so hard. Everybody has different... barometers of
what it is. What is your standard?
I feel like I shouldn't hold the key to be like, you're a New Yorker and you're not, but
no, that's fair. You were born, you said you went through the mud, you were raised in Bushwick. You can tell us what you feel a New Yorker is.
I mean, personally, I've heard the 10-year rule. I feel like it's either you had the school MetroCard that we all had, or you have a child here who gets that MetroCard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, have offspring that lives here. You've been here long enough where, like, now you got, you know. But I think...
What's the 10-year rule?
The 10-year rule that I've heard a lot, I think Alicia Keys just did a video, was like, I think 10 years, like,
when you start
saying it, is that, once you've been here for 10 years, you could claim New Yorker. But for me, I'm like, why do you want to, like, claim it? Like, Where did you come, where did you come from? And, I don't know. Did you grow up here?
I do feel, and I guess, I don't know if I'm defending them or not, but I do feel that New York is crazy enough that even a month here, you would feel like the impact of being in New York. Not to claim yourself a New Yorker, but it's like immediately as soon as you get here, it's like, okay, how am I going to commute places? Okay, I need to learn the train. So I feel like in 10 years, someone will, like, they understand the train lines they go to. They'll understand the blocks they can walk through. Maybe not. They'll understand the super dynamic. They'll understand the cat in the bodega. Like, I feel like there's a lot of quick learning that has to happen in New York, or else you'll literally get pushed to the side.
I think there's something to say, though, about people that know nothing but this, right?
So, yeah.
Like, those people have those 10 years, but they also have life outside of that.
Yes.
And I think there's something to say about the kid with the MetroCard that only knows this.
Of course. There's like a, so maybe it's like we could say there's a New Yorker, but then there's like a more rooted New Yorker. We need another name.
There's tiers to it.
There is tiers to it. That's fair. Okay. And now I wanted to talk a little bit about more of like the real New York City that you mentioned earlier in the conversation. So you mentioned that you grew up in NYCHA housing. And what is that stigma of living in the projects? What is that stigma that came with growing up in New York from the times that you remember it?
Yeah, I would say, unfortunately, like stigma and shame were something that I picked up. First, like, I think, I know we had mentioned this, like, being in spaces, different spaces that aren't just your hood may introduce those feelings, like, oh, like, maybe this is different, like, you know, and so I do think that what makes New York City special is our people, like, just hardworking people, rustle, bustle, commuters, just trying to, you know, get food on the table and make it out here. And I think we are losing this grit and this, like, culture, really. And I do think that, you know, when I was younger, there was a shame associated to public housing. Just the stigma that, like, you know, NYCHA residents aren't hardworking, or that we don't have things going on, or that, you know, I feel like my mom set up a very loving home and we worked very hard. And it was just, it's hard to live in this city. And so affordable housing is really important. And I am really grateful now, like years later, I'm able to just claim it and just understand that the people that NYCHA or Section 8 or whatever affordable housing thing that you have, like, I think we make the city special. And yeah, I'm not as interested in, like, the super overdeveloped metropolitan New York City.
Yeah. And if people get a chance to check out your work, I love the walking tours through Williamsburg that you did with your father. It was super sweet. I also love how you highlight local heroes, I call them, like, in your, on your TikTok and stuff. It's really informational. And it's cool to see that there's people doing this work when it comes to, like, preserving their community and preserving cultures. And they're doing it sometimes for no pay, and they're doing it without a spotlight. They're just doing it because that is, like, their life's work. And I love that you're giving that spotlight to those people.
And we want them to stay there. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it's fair for that overdevelopment to come at the expense of them, because I think they make New York City special. And I think when people come to New York, they think of, from my understanding, the grit and the, this, like, rich culture. But it's like, how can we preserve that if we're also not pendiente and we're just overdeveloping everything and modernizing everything, you know? Like, I think people need to realize that, like, all of this could be, you know, at the expense of that potentially. And you want that mom and pop shop to stay. You know, you want your little hole in the wall bar. And your little cuchifrito, and, you know, we don't need Chipotle and, you know, what is that pizza shop?
Two Bros. Okay, so how are New Yorkers, just to highlight the New Yorkers that are doing the work, how are we working to preserve our hoods? What's what have you seen?
I think there's, like, a really great amount of, like, young people particularly trying to preserve our hoods.
You're one of them.
I'll claim it. Are you hosting a podcast episode about, you know, a disappearing New York City? Is that as well, you know, like wanting to have a conversation and talk about it, and such a contentious topic and nuance. And I hope, I feel like we've been doing a good job of having that nuance, right? Because this is, like, a very hard topic.
Yeah.
But there's so many people. One of my favorite pages is Nueva Yorkinos.
Yes, I love that page.
It's so awesome. And it started from a friend who is from Uptown. But every time she has, like, a Bushwick or Queens or... Like, every time she has a Bushwick Williamsburg submission, I'm always, like, so excited because it's an opportunity for me to learn my other peers and preserve that. But then I'll be reading stuff from Queens and the Bronx and even Staten Island and, like, trying to understand better what other people's plights are in these neighborhoods and stuff. Sunset Park. And I feel like that's such a perfect example of, like, our generation taking the tools that we have now. This is a digital archive, right? Mm-hmm. There's a level of permanence to that.
Yeah.
And it's community-owned and operated and people wanting to submit and say, I have this story. And you know the photo albums that we grew up with. That's, like, such a part of our household is, like, going through those photo albums. So little things like that, I think that's radical. I think to preserve our family photos and stories in gentrified neighborhoods, that's, like, so cool.
It is radical. And it's really cool. I keep on going back to those walking tours you did with your dad because that is a lot of time. That oral history is important, too.
Okay, so the reason I started the page, we were mentioning, like, the whole mental health, wanting to feel proactive because I realized that, like you said, it's inevitable. It's irreversible.
Mm-hmm.
But what can we do to preserve?
Yeah.
That's, like, the key to all of it. And my dad, you know, I grew up with my dad just being like, this used to be that, and this used to be
that. He's just a walking bucket of knowledge. And a lot of our parents and grandparents are that.
Oral historians, like you said it. And that's why I was like, you know what, let me pull out the camera and just record him talking. Because I've gotten these stories my whole life, but I said, and when I said before about, like, it, you know, transplants are going to come to New York City, I actually think that they hopefully do have a curiosity. They just don't know where to get that information. So it's like, if, you know, you're willing to listen to me about what used to be there, I'd love to share if you're opening to listen to it. And I think that's healing for me to be like, you know, people do care and they do have a curiosity to want to know what a neighborhood used to be and how we made it what it was. You know?
Pausing for a minute from the conversation, gentrification, I wanted to talk about your Bori background, which you're so proud of, and then my Dominican background. So I thought it would be cool to play a little game.
Okay, fun fact.
Okay.
I was raised by a Dominican woman. So I'm like...
How did that happen?
I'm like fake Dominican.
How did that happen?
My mama Nereida, my abuela, she's Dominican. I grew up in a Dominican house as a Bori.
Okay, yeah. So it's a little... But I think this would make the game a little bit more interesting.
No, so as in, like, I'm hip. I know...
Yes, and because you have the exposure...
Yeah, I have exposure.
Yes, the context will be important for this game. So we're just going to play a quick round of who does it better.
Okay.
I'm just going to identify a word, and then you're going to say who does it better, and I'm going to say who I think does it better. Okay. So hair.
Dominicans.
I mean, we... Okay. I got beef with the Dominicans because they do be burning my hair, so I'm not even going to talk about it. But I would just say, in general, I don't really know too many Puerto Rican hair salons. If there are, let me know. I would love to try them out.
But they're not going to be as good as, like, a Dominican wash and set.
Yes, and I feel like when you find a good Dominican hairstylist that really cares about your hair, Dominican stylists are really cool because they deal with a variety of different hair textures because our culture is so diverse. So it's just our thing, and they're quick with it, and it works.
Dominicans for sure.
But yeah, when they don't burn my hair,
piss
me off. Anyways,
the ear. Did you see
this? Yes, yes. So they will at a Dominican hair salon. You will get music. You'll get bachata. You'll get a spoon for your ear.
When they go on the food run.
When they order food, you'll get people coming in selling things to you.
Always. Like the fajas and the earrings. You got that kid sleeping in the corner.
Yeah.
The magazines from, like, 5 years ago.
Yeah. It's an experience. Okay. Music. So, reggaeton or dembow, which would be, like, the music options that are popular right now.
Yeah. I mean, my preference is reggaeton, but, you know, I like dembow. I can get down, but preference is reggaeton.
I hate this. I feel like, okay, so I love everything my culture. Sorry about the mic. But reggaeton is my preference, but I love dembow too.
I need
to get into it. Yeah. I'm planning on going to DR this summer. I'm going to learn all the moves, you know, I'm learning.
I will say Dembo in DR. Like, I've been to DR a few times, and every time I experience it there, I'm like, yes.
Yes, getting into the vibe, getting into the culture, I love everything about it. But when it comes to, like, the music I'm going to listen to, it's going to be reggaeton. However, I have started listening to Dembo, like, when I'm doing cardio, and it does get me into it.
Yeah.
Dembo and, like, Perico Ripiao, like fast merengue music. So I do love Dominican music, but if we're comparing reggaeton or dembow,
the one that I listen to.
I know. Okay, plantains. So in all forms. So we're thinking like mofongo, we're thinking mangu, we're thinking all the iterations, tozones, all the iterations in which both of our communities use
platinos. We have overlap with tozones and maduros, but you're right. You do mangu and we do mofongo.
Yes, but we do.
I mean, we both do each other.
I don't know if you guys do mangu.
We don't.
So, but we both do mofongo.
Mofongo's a Rican dish. And I'm arguing with my Dominican friends about this.
I haven't been to Puerto Rico, but I've heard that the mofongo there is way better, and sometimes they do be dry at the Dominican restaurants.
This body's claiming, mofongo origins, pero you guys do it too. The thing is with Dominican food, like, Dominican and Puerto Rican food to me is my favorite, but it's in a sense sometimes synonymous. Like, you guys got the bistec, ensaboyado, and like all the things, you know what I'm saying?
The flavors are a little bit different.
Yeah. But okay, I'm gonna say Dominican mango because that's my favorite. But we have to have the cebollas with it.
Yes, of course we need the I would say plátano. I mean, Dominicans, like, we really really eat plátanos. I'm not that hip to Puerto Rican foods. I need to try more Puerto Rican food, like from a Puerto Rican restaurant.
Plátano is like every meal.
It's like we have the boiled plátanos. We do it maduros. Yeah. We do it tostones, fried. Yeah. We do the mofongo. We do the mangu. Yeah. Like, plátanos are, like, that should be our national, I don't know.
It is.
Our national, fruit? Whatever.
We definitely have that in common.
Yeah. I honestly agree. I think we're agreeing on everything.
Oh, no.
Okay. Dancing.
Okay.
So in the sense that, like, is Puerto Rican dancing better or is Dominican dancing better?
I'm going to say body only because I'm obsessed with salsa music. And I think salsa dancing is, like, an art form. I'm not as much... Like, listen, bachata's easier and I can get into it. But I would say salsa is my favorite, so I'm going to say body.
What am I going to say? Damn, this is hard. So... I do like that in Dominican dancing, there are some dances that are a little bit more accessible to me. Like, merengue is, like, kind of simple to get away with if you don't know really how to dance, which is the same thing. Yes, and bachata too. Salsa, I can't get down with the salsa. So I'm just going to say, I mean, salsa, I respect the skill that Puerto Ricans have. So I don't even know what I'm going to answer for it. I can't do it. So maybe Dominican dancing is a little bit easier for me.
Yeah.
But the salsa whole thing, like, when people are dancing salsa, then dance floor, I'm like, y'all got it. Like, I'm going to sit down.
But it's beautiful, right?
It's beautiful. Especially, when I see people who can really, really dance it. And then it's immediately like, who taught y'all that? Like, when were y'all learning this? Because I didn't learn this.
Well, I am a Puerto Rican in salsa classes. So I wasn't born with it.
Yeah.
But I'm learning because I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's like it's like another language. Yeah. It's like the lead is literally leading the follow. And in when you get advanced, it gets crazy.
Yeah. I'm going to say Dominican for this round. And I just love how I feel like Dominicans are real sexy with the dancing.
You guys are very, like, you're closer.
Very sexy. And, like, with the bachata, it can get real nasty. And, you know, that's cute. It's a cute vibe sometimes. Okay, slang. Like, Dominican slang or Puerto Rican slang? I like Dominican slang. I'm just going to say that. Dominican slang, I like it because it's something that I can't even catch up to all of it. There is so much Dominican slang. It's a whole nother language. If you, like, someone can say a whole sentence in just Dominican slang. And other countries won't understand it. It's, like, so Dominican. And I love that. I love that we have, like, our own little language. So I'm going to go with Dominican slang.
I'll say Puerto Rican.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's probably... They're Dominicans and Puerto Ricans and the vernacular and language is so different.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say body slang is hilarious.
And yes.
I feel like a lot of people enjoy reggaeton and there's, like, half of the stuff
true.
They say, like,
I love the body slang too. Through reggaeton, I've learned the body slang. Like, I'm like, what is Bad Bunny saying? I'm like, okay.
And he's getting the billions of streams, so I'm like, so many people are bumping to this body slang a lot of the time.
That's true. Yeah. And then it's adopted by like other cultures, yeah, and exactly. stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love Dominican slang too.
I feel like just healed the body Dominican, any body Dominican beef that exists in New York City. We just healed it. Yes. Right here.
And I think the beef is fake because there are
I don't have it.
I have a cousin that's a Dominican body offspring. There are so many offsprings of Dominicans and Puerto Ricans that it's like the beef is fake.
The beef don't exist here. I love Dominicans. Yeah. I know some people say, yeah, that there's like beef there. But
yeah. Not over here.
No.
Okay, that was a great round. We agreed on some things. And you know, even the things we disagreed on, I was like, I feel you on that one.
Yeah, I can hear that.
Okay. Now we're gonna end it with, well, two more things before we head out. I usually end the episodes with a harsh truth, but I think I'm just going to retitle this segment to the Casa Confession. Well, so the Casa Confession is essentially a harsh truth where a guest shares a lesson that you've been able to learn from this conversation or just in your life over the course of doing the work that you do.
A lesson that I've learned. I think that, when it pertains to the conversation that we had, I would say that empathy can exist both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that a lot of growth could come and productivity could come from everyone just sort of like thinking about the position that other people are in. But I think, and I was saying this earlier, that I do feel like a lot of the time I and my peers in their gentrified hoods are empathizing in a sense, like, okay, coming to terms with things, but it's also like, I would love to encourage people that are moving to also give that empathy back and to think about, you know, how they're participating in an evolving neighborhood. And I think there could be healing if both of those things happen at the same time. So not us coming just from a sense of just like anger and like, you know, not offering a hand, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the lesson, is like you pointed these nuances of like, okay, well, these are the ways that neighborhoods evolving could help and stuff, but always centering the conversation back to, I think, you know, the origins of where people, what neighborhoods used to be like. I think all those things at the same time hopefully make for a more productive conversation when it comes to this, because this is a hard one to have.
Yeah, perfectly said. I agree. And I think the theme of this conversation was having that curiosity. And then, like you said, having compassion is a good way if you're moving into a new neighborhood or you're thinking about ways to avoid contributing to this displacement issue, is being curious and being having compassion and empathy.
Don't give noise complaints when you hear reggaeton in the street. You know, maybe consider going to, you know, get your breakfast sandwich at the bodega and not at the new bagel Whole Foods place. You know, think about being kind when you see elders that have been in that neighborhood for a long time. You know, help, wave, be nice.
Yeah. And for people that, also the people that are listening to the podcast that know this stuff and are struggling and dealing with the mental health issues that come with this, just know that, like, we feel you and we hear you. We both are experiencing that, have experienced that. Mm-hmm. And these are some things you can do. You can get together and talk. You can record these conversations, save that history, take pictures, you know, use your art or whatever skill set you have to preserve our culture, because it's really important and really valuable.
Yeah, make space for yourself and think of creative ways to preserve and feel better and have conversations with other people to not feel isolated, because a lot of us, like you said, are going through it.
Yeah. And as you all know, You guys can obviously leave a comment, rating, review, so you can continue to hear conversations like this. And you can follow us at Casa Confessions Podcast on all social media platforms, definitely Instagram, TikTok, all of that. You can follow me on X @big_Lonnie. And you want to plug any of your social media here? Yeah, this would be a great time to do it.
Yeah, my passion project is at Hood History Here on TikTok. I would love to do more neighborhoods. I primarily interview my family and my peers and the business owners that I grew up with, but I would love to, you know, get to the Bronx. Let's do Bed-Stuy, let's do Sunset Park, Queens.
Yeah.
So always interested in collaborating and preserving other people's hoods. It really is healing. And yeah, my personal socials is at Mariah Espada.
Yes, give her a follow. And yeah, remember to subscribe to this podcast. Please like this video wherever you're listening. Now, we always end with a song of the podcast.
Okay.
So what's a song that you've been listening to lately that you want to lead people out to? But before we get to that, that'll just be a part of the audio portion because YouTube will demonetize us. So bye, guys. We'll see you at the next episode. It was so great to connect with you all again, and we're going to be more consistent now. So see you guys. Bye. And now we'll get to the song of the pod.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel like because based off of this conversation, it would probably have to be Let's Do Brooklyn by Jay-Z and...
Brooklyn's Finest? Is it this one? Or Brooklyn, Jay-Z, and Uncle Murder? Oh, no, that's Fabulous.
Yeah, do that one.
Okay.
Is Brooklyn in here tonight?
All right, we lit, y'all. Bye. See you guys at the next episode. Bye.
East New York, walk the Brownsville real ill. You see, I got a Fort Greene lean, Clinton Hill chill, Red Hook look, man. I ain't no shit.